Have you ever wondered what you would get if you crossed a school teacher with a vampire hunter? You would get a character that almost always has a plan, rarely curses, but is willing to rip your heart out. The fantasy novel Blood and Magic by R.L. Collins has been released on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Selena Anderson is a small-town teacher with a big-time problem with vampires who are out to kill her before she can make them her next meal. She is looking forward to a quiet, lazy summer in Culpeper, Virginia. At least this is her plan until three strangers enter her life in one day. Welcome to podcast episode number 15 as we dig deeper into the mystery of the red leather journal and the boogeyman in the Congolese jungle. It was twilight and I was reading my mother's journal. July 12th. Last night I had a visit from the strange man. Even stranger was that I was not on guard duty. I was in my tent, organizing my gear by lantern light. I felt a presence behind me and turned to see his hooded figure in the doorway. It startled me, but I'd promised myself to be braver the next time I saw him. I asked him how he managed to get through the guards. He gave me a roundabout answer, simply saying that he had his ways. We stood there for a long time looking at one another. I finally asked him about the intentions for his visit. He wanted to know if I had figured out who he was yet. I dared to tell him that he was the Congolese vampire. A tight smile curled his lips, keeping his teeth hidden. He thought it was funny that I'd listened to the natives tell such tall tales. However, he didn't deny it. I demanded that he show me his teeth. He told me he would only do so if I came closer. The camp was full of people. I could scream and any one of them would come running. I took a few steps toward him. I stopped when I was a few feet away. I demanded that he show me his teeth. He took the index finger of one hand and raised it to his lips, lifting one corner. There indeed was the malformation of the teeth that I'd seen last time. I asked him again what he wanted from me. He growled that he wanted me to know him. Then I found myself in his icy grip. He was bending me over backwards, exposing my neck. I yelled at him to tell me who he was. He whispered that he was Andre. I screamed, and then just as quickly as he appeared, he was gone. The guards rushed into my tent with their weapons drawn. I snapped the journal closed. Who was Andre, and why did he seek her out? What did he hope to gain? He had plenty of chances to kill her, but he chose to keep her alive. I had more and more questions that would only be answered by the journal. I opened it to read further. Maxine popped her head into the room. Selena, we're taking a trip to the mall to get rid of Tim's stalker roommates. Are you in or out? She asked. I'm definitely in, I said, as I stowed the journal into the night table next to the bed. Maxine and I gathered in the command room with Devlin and Tomlin. Lincoln was working the control panel. The other brothers had already been dispatched to monitor suspected vampire nests. Tim the vampire left us with a problem. We had known that vampires were frequenting the local mall in search of human victims. We couldn't let that go. Lincoln was not only a fighter, but a computer geek. He'd hacked into the mall's main security system. We had access to countless cameras that created a spiderweb of security around the mall. However, with such a large system, it was nearly impossible to keep an eye on every corner of the mall. But we had lucked out. Lincoln brought us up to speed about the two vampires that he'd been watching since last night. The two vampires in question appeared to be human enough and were currently sitting in the food court. They were dressed like youthful humans. One appeared to be Hispanic with dark hair, and he was wearing jeans and a t-shirt. His companion was fair with light hair, and he wore khakis and a black polo shirt. What made them stand out was that they were surrounded by people being happy and eating. However, they sat there stoic with dark sunglasses. While Lincoln was trailing them on the cameras, they would trail small groups of humans or singles as if sizing them up for a blood meal. Lastly, they never carried any shopping bags. We had our targets and we had our mission for the night. We began to suit up. I discovered Maxine's weapon of choice was a shiny black Glock with silver hollow tips. The tips exploded on impact and were great for blowing apart vampires, according to her. In no time, we were on our way to the mall across town, driving in our green Toyota Prius. We pulled into the multi-level parking garage. It was a hive of activity. People were coming and going. friends, families, and couples, Devlin kept in touch with Lincoln by way of texting. According to Lincoln at Command Central, the vampires were now in the movie theater lobby, people watching. We parked and made our way to the entrance of the mall. Once inside, we found a mall map to locate the movie theater. Vampire hunting did not lend itself to much mall shopping. Once we knew where we were headed, we made a beeline for our destination. We rode two escalators, walked across one scenic bridge, and took a glass elevator until we made it to the movie theater. The vampires made us the moment we crossed the theater's threshold. Their demeanor changed from relaxed and lounging in oversized chairs to stiff and alert and speed walking into the theater itself. The teenage usher tried to stop them, but the dark-haired vampire just strong-armed him and knocked him to the side. We slipped our way around the crowd. At the distraught usher, Devlin pulled out a very official-looking police badge and told the young man we were already on the case. Once past the terminal, we were confronted with a maze of options. Devlin texted Lincoln to get the vamps' latest location. They had disappeared into Theater 14, right next to the bathrooms. We were in hot pursuit. In Theater 14, the movie had already started, and people were fixated on the animated screen as they munched their popcorn. I caught the emergency exit door swing closed, and we took off in that direction. The emergency exit led to the parking garage. We were confronted with rows and rows of vehicles, silence, and no sight of the vampires. We spread out and began our search looking below, inside, and around the cars. I heard a scream. The dark-haired vampire had Maxine in a headlock and was backing out of the garage terminal. "If any of you come near me, I'll tear her in two," he snarled, wrenching her around the neck for good measure. He half dragged her, half walked her out of the garage exit. Maxine stamped his foot, and he looked down to smack her in the face. He didn't get a chance to look up before two flying silver stars caught him in the eyes. He howled in pain. Devlin was right on target. The vampire released Maxine, who whipped around to pull out her Glock and shot the dark-haired vampire dead center in the chest. Flesh and bone exploded outward. We could see the ticket gate through his chest. The vampire fell to the ground and began to disintegrate. Vampire number two rolled out from underneath a red Volkswagen Beetle next to me and began shooting. We all took cover as glass shards rained down all around us. While I was hugging the ground, I slid my silver sword out from the sheath against my neck. I swiped it at the vampire on the other side of the car, cutting his Achilles tendon. He dropped like a sack of potatoes. John rushed around to chop off his head with a swift cut from his machete. Vampire number two, sightless head, rolled towards me under the car and began to turn to gray ash like his friends. With our mission accomplished, we headed back to the mansion. We navigated the signs telling us the levels and sections of the garage until we found our Prius. We pulled out of the garage and began our trek home. Devlin texted Tomlin as we drove off. All was quiet, according to Command Central. The night was still young and people were traveling here and there. It was one of the few cool nights we had in a long time. People sat outside at cafes enjoying meals or drinks. I longed to be one of those carefree people. I wanted to check in with my family and friends to see how they were. However, I was a murder suspect. I couldn't go home until Raj's murderer was brought to justice. I didn't know who that was, so Jew and his people seemed eager to put the blame on Marcus and avenge his death. I needed to find a way to know for sure. We made our way out of town into quieter, darker roads. Up ahead, we saw a gray Audi along the side of the road. It appeared to be a family. The man had gray hair and was dressed in khakis and a blue Hawaiian shirt and was looking under the hood of the car. The woman, a redhead dressed in a green blouse and cream slacks, held her baby next to the passenger door. "We should stop and see if they need some help," Maxine said from the back seat. Nobody objected, and we all did just that. We pulled our Prius up behind the other vehicle on the shoulder of the road. John and Devlin got out to talk to the father to find out more about the problem and disappeared around the front of the car. The mother walked along the side of the car and put her child in the car seat in the back. I decided to get out and make small talk with the woman. She was backing out of the car when we came face to face. Seeing her up close was disturbing. Her makeup was misapplied. Her body fit square and awkward in her clothes. The red hair was a wig. She was a he. I looked down at the baby in the back seat and it was a doll. The he-she smiled at me, revealing sharp canine teeth. "Don't make a scene or your friends will die," he hissed. At that moment, Devlin and John walked around the front of the car. The phony father was right behind them with a gun in his hand. I heard Maxine come up behind me. Selena? She asked cautiously. Then the vampire in the wig pulled his own gun on both of us. Into the woods, he barked. Into the woods we went. We walked about 50 yards before our captors had us stopped and turned around. The dad vampire immediately asked us, "Where is Tim?" Oh no. Vampire Tim had friends that would miss him. I felt Devlin tense beside me. I thought I'd try to feign innocence. "Tim who?" I asked. "Don't play with us," the unnatural redhead growled. "We know you took him from the warehouse on Connor Street." "Yes," the other one piped up. "Marcus wants him back." "Well, what is so special about this Tim?" John drawled. "You bloodsuckers are everywhere. I'm surprised you'd notice one missing." That pissed off both vampires. They cocked their guns and aimed them at John. John put up both hands in the universal sign of peace and said, "Oh, you boys don't have a sense of humor." The vampire in the wig advanced on John quickly and punched him in the mouth. "Perhaps if we break a few bones and crack some skulls, you'll cooperate with us," he spat. We were in a bind. Tim the vampire was deader than dead. We'd even tossed his ashes. Devlin spoke up. "We'll take you to him," he suggested. "That's a wonderful idea," the redhead vampire said, grinning. Then he stomped over to Maxine and me and wrenched us around our arms. "We'll keep the women as insurance. You bring Tim here, and everybody gets to go home happy." The gray-haired vampire laughed at that, then whipped around behind John and Devlin. He poked them both in the back with his gun and told them to start walking. They headed back to the vehicles. They left us with one crazy vampire that produced plastic ties to bind our hands together like two jailbirds. He had us sit down on the ground while he had a fallen log to plop down on, and we waited. The darkness deepened and our captor began to look at us with hungry eyes. We continued to wait. He began pacing in front of us. I think we were all worried, but for different reasons. What was taking so long? Had the boys gotten away? Had their plan been foiled? Our captor's cell phone rang from the pocket of his women's slacks, and he began a very strange conversation. "You've got Tim," he exclaimed. "The women are fine. We're just sitting here waiting for some news. How is he? Did they hurt him?" A pause. The vampire paced in front of us, distracted as he had his conversation. "Excellent. When can you get here?" "Okay, I'll be waiting. Marcus will be pleased to have Tim and the women." I knew in that moment the vampires never meant to let us go free. My left hand was tied to Maxine's right. However, with my free hand, I began to work a blade out for my lower back while the vampire was distracted. Maxine stiffened. I whispered for her to stay still while I worked. "Dispose of the human men," the phony redhead growled as he turned to pace away from us. Then he snapped the phone closed and turned to walk back towards us. I took that as my chance. The silver blade embedded itself dead center in his chest. He dropped the phone and looked down at his now bleeding wound. Maxine had her Glock in her left hand and shot him right between the eyes. The moment he looked up, the back of his head exploded into a mess of brains and skull and hair against an oak tree. "Great aim, girlfriend," Maxine said. "I could say the same about you," I replied. I produced another blade from my stash of weapons and cut our plastic ties. We stood up and were dusting ourselves off when we heard a rustling through the trees. "We come in peace," we heard a voice say, and then Devlin and John came into the clearing. "I see you ladies don't need our help," John drawled as he stepped over the pile of ashes that was our captor. "What happened on your end?" I asked. "The demon was talking to his friend on his cell phone and was about to welcome Tim home." Devlin held up a cell phone that was not his own. That would have been me. We had to lead the vampire in a wild goose chase. We took him to an abandoned house outside of town. He kept his gun trained on us the whole time so we couldn't make any sudden moves. Once we got to the house, he was so excited to retrieve Tim that he rushed ahead of us. Then we got to him. "These two seem to make rookie mistakes," Maxine said. "Why would Marcus send such silly goons after us?" That was something we would have to wonder about. None of us had an answer at that moment. We made our way back through the woods to our car. We hadn't planned on this little detour, but thankfully there were two less vampires in the world because of it. Sometime later back at the mansion, I was reading my mother's journal. July 18th. Our guide tells us that we are a few days' journey away from the caves. I can feel that we are being watched. I know it is Andre. After the last incident when he came to me in my tent, I now keep a gun under my pillow. However, that didn't discourage him from visiting me last night. I was sound asleep when I heard a rustling in my gear next to my bed. I slowly reached under my pillow to retrieve the gun. "Ah, so your weapon must be under your pillow," he said. I didn't deny it. You may hold the gun if it makes you feel safer, he said, but you can't truly harm me with it. I'm not such a bad shot, I said. It's not about the aim. Then what is it about? I countered. He laughed at that and said he couldn't give away all his secrets. I reminded him that he hadn't given me any of his secrets. Well, which one would you like to know? He asked. Why are you following us to the caves? Do you want the flowers? Ah, the flowers, he said. I know all about the flower, where it is and what it can do. Then why are you following us? I've been following you. Why? I want you to succeed on your mission. Why? You are special to me. Why? You are full of questions. Try giving a straight answer. I felt him coming closer to my cot. A slow advance as if he didn't want to startle me. I could barely see him in the darkness except for the white glow of his skin. I clutched the gun, even though he told me it would be useless against him. I heard him laugh softly. I have something for you, he said. I don't want anything from you, was my reply. It will help you in your negotiations. Negotiations? No one told you the caves are guarded? No. Ah, but they are. You cannot simply plunder them and take all that you want. Who guards them? A special peep. Take this and show it to them. I felt the slight disturbance of air in front of my face. I reached out and took the pouch Andre was dangling before me. I reached for the lantern next to my table to turn up the flame. Andre was gone. The object he left me was a small velvet pouch. I emptied its contents into the palm of my hand. It was a silver necklace with a tear-shaped amber pendant. While Andre had given me this gift, he left me with more questions. If I could believe him, who were these people guarding the caves? Were they the reason so many researchers had disappeared or come back empty-handed on similar expeditions? I'd gotten this far, and it would take a lot more to make me turn back. Tomorrow we would reach the caves, and I'll hopefully have an answer. I closed the journal and stood up. I went to the dresser by the bathroom and retrieved Ophelia's gift to me, a silver necklace with a tear-shaped amber pendant. Could this necklace be the very same one that Andre gave my mother? How is it that Ophelia came to have it? I crossed the room to look out over the gardens. I felt that dawn was approaching. Someone knocked at my door, then Devlin popped his head in. We're all meeting. This is important, he said. And so I followed him down to the command room with all the others. All the brothers were there, including Sajou and Maxine. Missy was there too, which bothered me a little bit. We found it, Lincoln began. There is a nest of about 15 vampires in Mooresville and a mansion about twice the size of ours. The intelligence shows them coming and going at all hours of the night. However, they all gather together about an hour before dawn. Their daytime lair is in the basement, but we haven't been able to get any surveillance down there. The rest of the place is covered. Every entrance and possible exit. Tomorrow, we strike. I felt a sense of exhilaration that this was happening, but underneath it was an uncertainty. There were a lot of things we had to cover. There were also a lot of things that could go wrong. We began to talk about our strategy for tomorrow. Thank you for listening to this week's episode. Come back same time, same place next week.